seen anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner for Caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it!
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
Hello, you're very welcome along to Golf Weekly. We're coming to you on this sunny Thursday afternoon. There is lots going on in the world of golf. We are here as ever with thanks to the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open, which is on the 6th of July. You're smiling at me, Nathan.
I would love to go to Dubai someday.
Dubai. I gave it a bit of a j as opposed
Why
to
not?
D.
Why not? Go for it.
I'm feeling generous. It's beautifully sunny here in Ireland. I hope it's sunny wherever you are. And Wentworth is on, as mentioned, which is always one of the great tournaments. And it's the start of the Rolex series, which we'll be talking about on the pod this week. Nathan Murphy, as you've heard, is here. Hello.
How's it going?
Good. We're counting down now to the Irish Open, actually. It's very exciting. It's on the horizon.
Yeah, what, 6 weeks away?
Something like that, yeah. Very much part of the next 8 weeks of very good European Tour action. On the pod this week, there's no Fionn, there's no Dave McIntyre. Fionn is in the States doing some travel journalism of some description. I'm not entirely sure where Dave McIntyre is.
I think he's on his way back from Stockholm.
Oh yeah, okay. Dave McIntyre was watching Manchester United win the Europa League final last night, and if you're listening somewhere and not too sure what all that means, you did not miss much. So on the pod this week, just an interesting one really, because Fionn and Dave weren't around, we decided to go out to Luttrellstown, where Peter Lawrie, of course, is head pro, been head pro for the last 6 months or so. Myself and Nathan played nine. Won't lie, can't lie. Can't lie.
The hottest day of the year. Mm. Dave and Fionn weren't around. Yeah. It was really the only option was to get out there and play nine holes.
Yeah, it was gorgeous, beautiful. Oh. It's the course in great shape. Our games, I think, aren't in bad shape. I think there's cause for optimism.
Yeah, at the different levels.
Sure, yeah, but cause for optimism for at different levels. And the greens, I mean.
Oh, the greens are sensational. They're some of the best greens I've ever played on.
Peter says they're 10.5, 11 on the stint meter. I mean, it's quite an experience to play in those greens, both approach shots, chip shots around the green, and then actually putting from 6-7 feet. Scary stuff.
He made a good point, which we'll hear, that you have to read the greens a lot more, yeah, because you're so used to, maybe when you're playing, I don't want to say lesser courses, but greens that aren't of the greatest quality of, all right, just hit it in that direction and hope it gets close to the hole. Mm. Whereas there, if you hit it pure, it's going to go exactly where you hit it.
Yeah, you can't put enough pace on it to hit it through any break, so you have to play for the breaks, whereas as you said, maybe lesser slower courses you can just rifle it a bit more towards the hole at times. So it's good, and we've chat with Peter about various things. He'll touch on the Rolex series, he'll touch on the ESRI report on golfing playing numbers, which was released last week or so, and pretty much says exactly what you'd all expect it to say. And that will be kind of us for this week, because we're tight for various reasons. Nathan's very stressed putting together the weekend show. And here at Off the Ball, it's 5:06 now on a Thursday evening. We are doing a live show at 7 sharp in DCU, which is about an hour's drive away in this traffic, with Michael Ballack, the Michael Ballack, John Giles, Ronnie Whelan, David O'Leary, Mark Lawrenson. So I am under researched, I have to say. So can't be talking.
What's your best
here.
Michael Ballack stat?
My best Michael Ballack stat is that in his first 71 games for Germany, he had scored 30 goals, which was a better scoring rate than both Thierry Henry and maybe just as good as Michael Owen.
How does it compare to Robbie Keane?
Probably not great. Ballack ended up with 42 goals in 98. Still very impressive.
For a midfielder.
For a midfielder, yeah. And the other interesting thing about Ballack is that he was born right in the border with Poland in 1976, so East German, and was the last generation to go through the East German schools, where there were 6 a.m. wake-up calls and lots of practice. So
I don't expect you to know this,
the reason he's
but
great
maybe you do.
The reason he's a great technician is because, you know, drill after drill after drill, hour after hour after hour, you know, methodical, that kind of... It was a football school, effectively, he went to, and so that's why he's such a classy technical player now.
So of that generation, yeah, were players from East Germany technically better than players from West Germany?
Yes, that was the perception. I mean, these are gross stereotypes, of course, and it depends on specifics, but in broad strokes, yes, it turns out they were perceived to be better technical players. And then, and again, I don't know if this is true, but it's like
go for it.
It's a convenient, and some German listeners.
It's only going to be 1,000 people there tonight. Here, you throw it out there.
It's a convenient stereotype. I read in a Simon Cooper piece in the Financial Times that West German players were the leaders of the team. They were more free spirits, independent thinkers, whereas the East Germans, the Ballacks, were seen as a bit more obedient. That was how they were raised. They weren't
well organized.
Free thinking wasn't encouraged. Again, stereotypes. Everyone's different. I think Ballack was independent in many ways, based on some of his quotes. He got into arguments with managers, but yeah, he'll be on. So that's kind of where I've had my head. A few things we should mention very briefly before bringing you Peter Lawrie is that Tiger Woods has had surgery again, and his statement is incredibly upbeat. He's had a fusion, which is a last resort, it seems, but everybody from Peyton Manning to Brian O'Driscoll, other rugby players, to, interestingly, Davis Love III, have gone for fusions in their back or neck when all hope seemed lost. And Woods feels good. He says the first time he's not had pain, genuinely the first time he's not been in pain.
Yeah, it's interesting that you thought it was quite upbeat. I almost thought the opposite, that it was more realistic than any of his previous statements when he's had, and this is what, the fourth operation he's had on his back. So he said, I think for his general life, this is the best thing that has happened to him, for being able to get up and play with his children, that kind of thing. But he's not going to be able to swing a club. He's not going to be able to twist his back for 3 to 4 months. We're probably talking certainly 2018 before he can even think about a return to competitive golf. I just thought it was that final bit of the statement where he said, I just want to make it clear, I want to be unequivocal in this, I want to get back and play professional golf again. Mm. Not, I will.
Yeah.
Not, I want to play in the PGA Tour. I want to.
Yeah.
I hope to.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. I take your point totally. I hadn't really read the statement in terrible depth. I'd seen Davis Love III talking about it, where Love was struggling very badly. Now, the neck is obviously, in terms of the golf swing, the pressure and the demands on a neck, so different to the lower back. But Love had a neck fusion operation, and within 3-4 months he was back swinging well. He said that's what allowed him to win on the tour in 2015. And he had said to Woods, this is the way forward for you, you know. And like he said, he was in touch with Woods a day or two after the operation, and Woods was saying, oh my God, the relief of suddenly genuinely not being in any pain. Whatever nerves were being exposed are now away from exposure. And that's certainly why Woods was very upbeat. So, look, if nothing else, I guess, for the guy's life, it will mean he's not going to be hobbling. You know, you know that hobble that's slightly bent at the waist, kind of old man hobble he had, because clearly...
Oh, well, been able to bend down and pick up a tee.
You can almost feel the nerves and pain when you looked at him. So apparently that's all gone. Now, it's just, I don't understand the signs. I don't know if a fusion restricts your flexibility, your ability to turn in a golf swing.
Do you need to rebuild your golf swing again?
I mean, that's the last thing in this. Davis Love III seemed to suggest, and he would know more about it than me, so I'm going off his upbeat assessment. He said it would actually help Woods through the golf swing. It would force him to use his body in a certain way, and he seemed to be very upbeat, almost giving us great hope that maybe we get 3, 4, 5 years of Tiger, who's still, 5, 6 years younger than Phil. Now,
the other side of that is, and Tiger touched on this in his statement as well, he needs to be sensible. He needs to be smart.
Yeah.
He can't push his body the way he did.
Yeah.
He needs to accept that this is going to be a long process, that his back is in a bad way, and that maybe he does need to, again, go back and create another new swing, something sustainable. What we've seen over the past few years doesn't suggest that he has that sort of patience, that he's going to want to be back in the gym. He's going to be want to pushing himself that little bit too far.
Yeah. No, it's all true. I mean, I would still be, if I was a betting man, I still don't think Tiger Woods ever wins a tournament again at this stage and barely plays. So Wentworth is on, it's underway, and it's obviously a really beautiful course to watch the coverage on, and like a flagship event. No Sergio, no Rory, obviously. And they've made changes to the greens and to the course generally. Peter Lawrie will talk to us about them in a moment. It's his first year not being at Wentworth. They expect the scoring to be better, maybe 15, 16 under. Shane Larry started well today. Clark started okay. Harrington. So we'll review all that in a bit of depth next week. And the only other quick thing to mention is that Billy Horschel won at the weekend in a playoff against Jason Day. Jason Day missing a putt from 4 or 5 feet. This exact same putt he'd had 15 minutes earlier, but it's a bit of a return to form for Day. And it turns out Billy Horschel had a really difficult year. His wife had a post. She'd been battling alcoholism over the last year and seems to be sober now a year. Or so she's been battling it, I guess. Yeah, she's sober a year and battling it before that. So it's just a weird, you know, just the most unexpected weird thing you don't expect to see pop out after a win like that for Horschel, who I really do like. I've always liked him, good guy. Yeah.
And like, he's a bit spiky.
Bit of an edge,
yeah. Which like he's almost like he's the complete opposite to Jason Day, who has no edge.
Yeah. It makes him real, I think.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe this makes him a bit more real. Mm. And you could say this about any sportsman. Like, people generally don't care what goes on and have no interest. Nobody's looking at Billy Horschel's collapse in form over the last year and not winning tournaments and going, it's probably something going on in his personal life.
Well, funny, a lot of people looked at Billy Horschel and said, yeah, that's what happens when you win $10 million in the FedEx Cup. Mm. You just don't practice that extra 20 minutes every day. But clearly, you're the love of your life battling alcoholism. It's going to take up some of your time.
Yeah, and when you start looking at the stats of what he's done for his age, he's won 4 times now in the PGA Tour.
He's a good player.
He generally delivers.
Yeah, he's a very good player.
It wasn't the most exciting. It was weird. It wasn't as exciting as it should have been, considering it was two quality players in Horschel and Day. The highlight for me was when George W. Bush arrived into the commentary booth for about 45 minutes. He laid the smackdown on Nick Faldo.
You mentioned this earlier. You said genuinely brilliant earlier on.
Well, he was loose.
Yeah.
You had the sense that they were nervous in the commentary box that he could literally come out with anything.
Right. So he was slagging, he was needling Faldo.
He was needling Faldo, questioning why he was called Sir.
Yeah.
And had that tone of that he was talking to idiots.
Good.
That,
I mean, it must be, imagine
constantly educating them about life.
The very intelligent top journalists he's had to deal with, asking him about issues which are very complicated and maybe he's trying to be evasive. Suddenly you go into that booth and it's like the boys talking about sports. It must be like going back to play school. It's like how I feel when I'm here with when I'm here with you guys after being an off the ball.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
This is so relaxing for me.
So he was on, Fox or was he on NBC? Or was he on Golf Channel? Just trying to think how this worked. So he said, he was talking about the Walker Cup, George Walker Bush.
Okay.
And his family history with golf and all that. And he said, I'm really excited. I'm going to a lot of tournaments this year at the President's Cup. I'll be at, are you guys covering that? And No. That'll be on our sister station, NBC. And there was awkward silence.
Right. I might try and check that back. George.
Now, I was watching it going, this is mildly entertaining, but it's still far more entertaining than what I've been watching for the previous hour.
Yeah. It's funny how, like, he's waged war on the Middle East, completely destabilised the area, and ultimately kicked off the process which has led us to a point now where ISIS are terrorising the entire world. So history should not make me like him anymore, and yet I've kind of softened in my opinion of George. Maybe it's just because the current incumbent is just so horrifically awful.
It's the twinkle in his eye when he looked at Michelle Obama.
Yeah, it's strange, isn't it? Because really, history should not be.
So you're suggesting
judging
him well. In 10 years when Trump is standing at the back of the green about to present something at Doral?
Surely be in jail at that stage, won't he? One way or another.
Presumably.
So that's that week, and a good win for Horschel, a return to form for Day, and we're at an odd-named tournament.
The Dean and DeLuca.
On the PGA. I'll be making a point to watch him Wentworth, and hopefully Lowry has his usual Wentworth bounce. Seems to play better this time of year. He needs it, Lowry.
He badly needs it.
Yeah.
Down to 76th in the world rankings.
It's a big fall. He doesn't want to be hovering around there come the start of next year for a variety of exemption reasons.
Yeah, Peter Lowry's going to talk about the changes. And you mentioned 18, how when shorter in the water, you go long, you're in the bunker.
Yeah,
Shane Lowry's the only guy I saw reach that green in two. In, was it 2014, he finished runner-up to Rory?
Yeah.
Hit the most sensational shot to land it on the green, eagle, from about 10 feet.
God, that was a thrilling day, really, wasn't it? Lowry versus Rory at Wentworth. Amazing. Okay. We're going to bring you Peter Lowry next. So I won't lie, today barely qualified as work in many ways. We played 9 around Luttrell's 10. And interestingly, the TV3 crew were there as well. Tommy Martin, Michael Brady and Graeme Souness and Keith Andrews. They were all out for a 4-ball. So at one point we decided with Peter, because it was such a beautiful day, gorgeous, like Luttrell's 10, very busy. We sat outside. Nathan had some food, as you'll hear, and we sat outside and had a drink and food and had our chat there, and the lads were finishing the front nine and walked by us, and so you get some added Graeme Souness on this.
This is the way the podcast is heading. Like, Graeme Souness, Graeme, jog on.
Yeah.
You've got your 2 minutes of fame.
Yeah. Graham, come on. Graham, go, go. We had to force Graham Souness away from the chat. So, Peter Lawrie in excellent form. And just as we started this, as you'll hear, Nathan Murphy has a very tasty looking sandwich arrive at the table. It was that kind of afternoon. So here we are at Luttrell's Town. I should mention as well, Nathan Murphy's just had a bacon BLT land on his...
Yeah, gluten-free bread here at Luttrell's Town Golf Club.
Is that right?
Yeah. Okay. And soy milk. It's hipster central.
Excellent. I'll try and ignore your BLT
well,
for the next
I think I'm just
going
to have to leave it.
Peter Lawrie is here, of course. Hello.
Hello, Joe.
Thanks for having us out, ever. You've had all the famous people out here. Nathan Murphy, Graham Souness was out.
They were indeed.
Keith Andrews.
Keith Andrews this morning.
And Tommy
plenty
Martin
of others.
TV3.
Yes.
Everyone's out. It's very, very busy here today.
Very busy. Golf course in with beautiful weather. Mm. Golf course is in great shape, as you know yourselves, having played this morning. You know, it's a place to come and, you know, have a look at. Luttrell's Town has been one of those hidden gems. Mm. And we're starting to get people to recognise how good it is.
I must say, I didn't know it was so nice until I started playing in the last... year less. I'd no idea.
Right. That's the problem.
Yeah.
You know,
get the
it's
word
one
out.
Of those get the word out.
Yeah.
And we've really tried to do that on social media and stuff like that. And we offer, you know, sort of a wide range of offers here. You know, it's not a kind of a one stop or a, you know, one size fits all. You know, we we're certainly open to for the guys who want to play very early in the morning, we have a very good rate. Mm. And then for the guys who want to play at peak times, then they got to pay peak time rates.
We were saying as we're going around, it has a championship course feel about it compared to your average club parkland course. And the way the greens are set up, is that in your mind when you're setting up the course that people are expecting a, as well as an enjoyable round, a pretty stern test?
My idea when I came here was, one is when you look at the golf course, you want to raise the height of the trees so everybody can play a shot from underneath the trees. We have very little rough, very little heavy rough. I would love to see hardly any rough on this golf course and play it a bit like kind of a Valderrama style, where as long as you're on the fairway you have a shot. If you miss the fairway you still have a shot, but you got to manufacture a shot. None of this hacking out stuff and anything like that.
That's a great point actually, because so when you're talking about raising the height of the trees, clearly you're talking about from the ground up, so people have a swing under the trees. There's no more quickly a way to ruin around a golf than if there's trees just off the side of each fairway and there's no room but to hack out sideways. It's too punitive.
Exactly, and it slows up play.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're all in it to enjoy our golf. We're all in it to enjoy the atmosphere. Mm. But we want to get around in, you know, in 4 hours or less.
Yeah.
And I think we have to, we're constantly looking at that to get people to enjoy it but get around quick enough around the golf course.
Yeah. I was saying to Nathan, me and Fionn did 3 hours 40, the two of us, a Wednesday morning ago, without rushing, without particularly trying to, we just suddenly realised that was very quick.
Yeah, we did 9 holes there in pretty much just under 2 hours. Yeah. And as you say, it is probably one of the busiest days of the year that you'll have.
Yeah.
What about people who go onto the opposite fairway like me? What can you do to help us?
Then you hit it over those trees that we're trying to raise the heights on.
How are you finding things? You're doing this...
Is it 6 months now.
6 months.
6 months. Okay. September the 19th is engraved right in my brain here when I started here. It's been tough, I have to admit.
Yeah.
It's been tough on the kind of the mental side of it more than anything else, not playing, especially this week with Wentworth on. It was one of my favourite golf courses, favourite tournaments to be at. Always did quite well at Wentworth, picked up a load of money out of it. Instead of that, I'm working on tee sheets and having teas and bacon sandwiches with you guys.
Yeah. It always struck me, and everyone, I presume, it's going to be a difficult process. I guess you'd be a very intelligent person, so you would have known this is going to be tricky. Has it been trickier than you expected?
I kind of have thrown myself into it.
Okay.
You know, I've engrossed myself into this and another project that I'm working on as well. And that has kind of kept me, you know, kind of sane, I would have said.
Keep busy. Yeah.
That's the big thing, keep busy. I think if I had stopped playing and sat at home, either my wife would have killed me or I probably would have killed her, you know. you need to keep busy.
Was that advice that another athlete had given you, or did you seek advice, or just intuitively figure that yourself?
I actually tried to seek advice, but nobody could give you an answer, really. It's like anything, it's what you're going to cope with. Yeah. And this was my coping mechanism, was to keep as busy as I possibly could and push that little problem down the road there somewhere.
Yeah.
Eventually it doesn't become a problem.
Did you take a clean break from the European tour in terms of the people you were friendly with, the relations you had from there? Did you say, all right, I'm done with that, I've moved on to a new chapter in my life, I don't want to be sitting in the Thursday seeing what's going on at Wentworth or some of the other courses throughout the year?
I have hardly watched a shot hit in golf for the last maybe 6 months. And I have had, literally, I walked off the golf course and that was me done. There was no goodbyes, there was no emails, there was no phone calls, it was finished. Move on. And I suppose, like anything, you know what I mean, you close one chapter, you open up another, and you just got to keep going.
It's the nature of professional sport. I doubt many of the guys that you would have spent hours playing with down the years get in touch 6 months later to check in and see how's things.
No, but look,
yeah, that's the way it goes. It's not personal. Yeah.
No, it's not personal. Like I spent, you know, as I used to say, like Damien, I spent kind of 13 years sharing a room with Damien, you know, and we hardly see each other now.
Yeah.
Now we keep in contact on phone and stuff like that, but that's just the way it goes.
It's generally a handful of guys tops.
Exactly.
Seems to be the way.
Yeah.
And what about hitting some balls?
Very rarely. Played a couple of holes, played the odd 18 holes here and there, but very rarely.
Yeah. Do you miss that? The thrill of a well-struck 7-iron?
I miss the competing.
Right, okay.
I miss the competing. Okay. Like, I played here last Wednesday and I was 4-under after 9, and I'm thinking, you know, why did I actually stop playing?
Yeah.
But then I realised, you know, the ball doesn't do as I tell it to do anymore. So, we're getting there, slowly but surely.
Is there a big difference in your 400 through 9? Is there, like, in the quality of your shots, the control you have?
Oh, very much so, yeah.
Big difference.
Now it's all feel and brain, you know, taking over, rather than it used to happen automatically.
Right.
Now I really have to think about it.
Right, okay. And did you enjoy it?
I suppose I enjoyed playing well.
Yeah.
I would hate to go out there and play poorly and then, you know, now I know why I gave it up.
Do you feel pressure when you're out playing 9 holes for the fun of it?
No.
Everyone's watching you?
No, well, no. You'd go out with a few lads, no. There's nobody watching you, really. Not here anymore.
So if you're 4-under after 9, do you come in and think, I need to make that course a little bit tougher?
Yeah, well, I have a Peter Lorre Challenge Cup here on Sunday, and it's 36 holes.
God, the ego of you. It's out of control.
No. Well, it was just to get the name out there to keep it going. It's not
Peter Lorre Cup.
Hold on a second.
Is there a Peter Lorre named trophy every week, every month? There's a Peter Lorre medal.
This is the guy who has his own TV show.
I don't anymore.
So I wonder why. No, but anyway, look, we have this Scratch Cup on Sunday.
Yeah. What's it called again?
It's called the Scratch Cup. And I'm going to be... they're going to know they've played Luchestown.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
We're going to put them off the back tees.
Okay.
And it's a long, long golf course off the back tees here.
Because, I mean, something we really enjoyed was the greens are very, very fast here. And you were saying they're probably 10.5 maybe on the St. Peter.
Yeah, getting up to 11, yeah.
Getting up to 11. I mean, but that goes to show at the average parkland that I play in my life, they're nowhere near that fast.
No.
And, yeah, I mean, it's a challenge, but it's also very enjoyable. It strikes me to go back to something that's 8 or 9 on a St. Meter. I feel like I'm absolutely whacking a putt. There's no finesse to a lot of them.
Now you can actually feel it, and you can sort of feel your 20-footers and trying to roll them at the hole. Yeah.
You're almost just starting them and getting a good roll and letting the green do the work.
Yeah, so now you got to read the greens more.
Yeah, true. Stopping my 5-iron on them was interesting. I'll talk to you about that another
time. Was that be the 5 hybrid, or was that be the 5-iron?
It's a thinned 5-iron which ran
up. Right. Okay.
Something we wanted to ask you about, because I guess it ties in what we're talking about, was an ESRI report which came out last week. Peter Lunn and Dr. Eilish Kelly at the ESRI were commissioned by the Confederation of Golf in Ireland to look at golf in the country, and it covered 2003 to 2013. And I mean, without even reading the report, you could predict what was going to happen already. Geez, this is the Luchestown. Graeme Souness, Tommy Martin, Brady all walking by.
All walking past.
Graeme, do you want to come over and tell us what you made of the 9?
Don't mention how bad we played.
Yeah.
Well, we thought we were going to have a bit of a challenge today, but we're 4 up after a 9. Course isn't great, Nick. Could not have picked a better day.
Weather's beautiful perfect. Set of golf clubs we gave him.
Peter's looked after us. Tell him about the pitch. There is a bit of bad news.
Okay.
Peter, I have misplaced, not lost, the pitching wedge. It's not lost, it is somewhere on your golf course.
Okay, that's okay. Don't worry, we'll find it, Graham. We'll find it. As long as it's not in one of your playing partners' heads,
well,
then we're okay.
It's all footballers against the media men.
Right.
And right now, the media men are deep in the mire. Deep in it.
Very Can good. I just say, Graham is in unbelievable shape for his age.
He said he just said you're in unbelievable shape.
For an old bastard.
Exactly. There you go.
See you guys.
See you, enjoy. Jeez, the rich and famous. Way. This is what a life.
There we go.
This is just every Thursday.
There you go.
So anyway, from that bit of showbiz, back to the ESRI report.
Who's next around the corner?
Yeah. So you would know what this is going to say, essentially. Golf playing figures are down. Interestingly, the GUI's membership spiked. It was 177,000 in 2007. The crash then happened, clearly. That's part of the story here. It's currently at 135,000 adults, and then there's 20,000 junior members, which isn't terrible, I suppose. And golf was identified as one of the most popular sports in Ireland. Unusually high numbers for people over 55. But then the big issue is younger people not playing as much. The numbers are going right down, and the reasons are what we all thought. Family life, not people are time poor, and it's too difficult to fit it around their lives, so that's a factor. But then once people get to a certain age, they're able to keep playing it. So that's the picture. That's there's no surprise in any of that, really, I dare say.
No, but there's one thing missing in that report,
right,
and which I'm amazed that they haven't put in there, is for the players who stop playing, you know, guys your age, my age, who stopped playing maybe a couple of years ago, financial commitments, family, whatever it is.
Yeah.
There's a lot of them coming back out to play now, and they're not members of the GUI.
Mm.
They're not members of any golf course. They're floating around. They're nomads.
Yeah.
You know, and they love to play golf.
Yeah.
And they're searching, you know, tee times and whatever else, and they'll play any golf course.
Yeah.
You know, as long as it's a nice day, they go out and play. They pay their money. And this is where golf clubs have to look at it. And, you know, I'm looking at it here in Luchestown, is we forget about those people.
Yeah.
You know, we forget about them, and we don't offer them a package. Like, golf clubs are too sort of boxed in. They only offer packages for, you know, one or two packages. They don't offer a broad spectrum of memberships or whatever else. And when I approached the GUI maybe about a year ago to build a booking engine, really, this was what it was all about. It was all about trying to get this information of all these players, you know, into one centralized system. So the golf clubs, like, if I knew I had 20 guys here playing maybe 20 times a year, would it not be a good idea for me to offer them some kind of a membership to be part of the club? So the GUI I've got on board, we called it GolfNet. And that kind of information is going to feed back to the Golfing Union of Ireland to boost their membership, and to give something back to the game of golf to try and get more people attracted to playing golf.
Those players, because I was one of them probably 6-7 years ago, where I used to go on tee times on a Tuesday night, play 10 o'clock Wednesday morning at some course around Dublin. It cost you £20. Do those players have handicaps, or are they just going around playing a social round?
Mainly they're going to play in social rounds, you know, and that's all they're doing. They've no handicaps. They might have had a handicap that they're working off, you know, a long time ago, but they haven't played in a singles competition.
Mm.
And then it's unfortunate then they can't play in open competitions and stuff like that.
I was just going to say, that's the big, if you're a tee times nomad,
yeah,
that you can't go on to GolfNet the way we can as members and play in an open comp. It's missing a trick, because it's interesting. You say you miss the competitive side of golf.
Yeah.
I'm now at a point where I don't enjoy the casual round as much as playing in a comp now.
Exactly. You want to have some kind of something to play for at the end of the day. You don't mind putting your 5 or your 10 to enter the competition, and away you go.
Yeah. More money for everyone.
Exactly. But the issue previously is, and it's happened to a lot of golf clubs, is they've been giving away their golf club a little bit too cheaply.
Right.
So it's been damaging their brand.
Right.
You know? So sometimes when you look on the likes of who you were looking on, they're selling their barter tee times.
Mm.
You know? So the golf club might be selling their tee time at €40, and other people are getting their tee times at €20. And it might be just one time a day or two times a day.
Mm.
But it's devaluing the brand of the golf club. And that's what we have to look at as well.
Yeah, because I'm not sure, I haven't used it in quite a while, but certainly I played Luchestown, I'd say, in 2010 for €20 for 18 holes. You might play out in Castleknock for, like, some days, again, if you get the right tee time, you could play for a tenner.
Yeah.
I've seen golf clubs, and they're not too far away from here, and I'm not saying here, but for €12.
Yeah.
Like, you just can't do that. You know, your golf course is worth more to you than a tee time for €12. Mm. Because, don't get me wrong, these are the guys who are paying €12, getting back in their car and driving home.
Yes.
You know, there's no value.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where you have to offer value. As well as the opposite, like what I'm saying, you have to give them the chance to play in a competition and get value.
Yeah.
But €12 is not a value for anybody.
Yeah.
When you're looking at what you've seen over the past 6 months, and you, I think it was 20,000
juniors,
like, that actually doesn't seem a huge amount of people who in 10 years' time you'll be hoping will be becoming members somewhere. Is it difficult to get younger people into a club like this? Do you want teenagers playing around here?
I personally do, because I was a professional and I've come up the ranks, you know what I mean? But we really have to look at it. One of my projects going forward is to replicate something like the GAA do, where they have their cool camps.
Yes.
And they have 120,000 children during the summer going to the camps. And that's where golf needs to get to.
Yeah.
You know?
Make it fun.
And golf really needs to... a nice kick up the you-know-whatskies. Mm. The administrators, you know? Because that's... golf will die if you don't get kids into it.
Yeah.
And we need to find the new Rory McIlroy, and we can't be... like, you take for a golf club, and you have members in the golf club, and you have their kids in the golf club, so you're fishing in the same bowl. Mm. We need to be fishing in, you know, Johnny who's in the, you know, house down the road that nobody plays golf, nobody in the area plays golf, but he might be the next Rory McIlroy, he might be the next Tiger Woods.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. I mean, the cool camp idea... it's such a no-brainer, and you could imagine summer days, summer evenings. Like, any good golfer as a kid played 36 holes a day, and then went chipping competition, and then a putting competition.
Yeah.
And probably the best days of their lives as well.
Best days of their lives.
Yeah.
And like, you look at it, you look at Shane, Porrick, myself, Damien, whoever. That's what we did.
Yeah.
When, you know, when we're out on tour, we'd have competitions, you know, chipping and putting. And it's going back to our old, you know, as kids, around the putting green for hours upon hours.
Yeah. Kids love that.
Of course
they
do.
Fun.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of, you know, in Ireland there's a real issue. It's a wider issue. It affects athletics. It affects everything. But, you know, even at primary school, generally it's GAA, football, throw the ball in, let them go at it. There's a lot of kids who might be very fast, very athletic, could be brilliant golfers, and they don't know.
No.
And
they've never been given the opportunity.
The thing, yeah.
How do you go about that, though? Because, so, say where I live, and I have a five-year-old, and like where I live is smack bang in the middle of where you, Padraig Harrington, Paul McGinley, all grew up. For him to play golf, I need to join either the Grange or the Castle, generally, and then he comes in with me, which, frankly, I can't afford.
Yeah.
So how does he play golf if I'm not a member of that club?
Well, that's the big issue. You know, you look at places that have facilities, and they're the ones who should be pushing it. You know, we need to push it here. We have three little academy holes here.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic for kids.
Yeah.
You know, you can get your 5 and your 6 and your 7-year-old up, and he can play those holes with his driver and his putter and his wedge and whatever else.
Mm.
And that's where we need to be getting it. We need to be... schools need to start doing a program for golf.
Yeah.
There's one or two people who are already doing it
in
community halls and stuff like that, where it's, you know, indoor golf or it's snag golf or it's, you know, short game or whatever it may be. But that's where we have to start.
Absolutely, yeah. And golf courses would be more than open to linking up with schools and picking certain days and doing various things.
Funny you say that,
right?
Because that was my idea when I came in here in Luchestown.
Yeah.
And I rang up three schools, three prominent schools. And yes, all on for it. And then, gone.
Do you know why?
Not a word. You know? And it's a case of, they just... it's probably not easy for them to organise it. They've never done it before.
Mm.
But, you know, I put out some really good offers to come up, but it was like, you know, it was giving it away, you know, to get kids interested in it.
Yeah.
You know?
We'll come back to that another point, no doubt. Before we let you go, Wentworth is on. You mentioned this week, probably a tricky week for you, as you know...
don't watch the telly. Can't watch it.
I guess, you know, Kev Coban on the show, other footballers, rugby players, they all say the same thing. It's like you have to get through that first cycle of missing out on everything. Like, I think even Brian O'Driscoll was saying, okay, 2 years ago, right, it's my first World Cup, then it's my first Six Nations and first Lions tour, so it's your first Wentworth
missing.
I guess so. And I was there in 2013, and God, I didn't realise how amazing it is. Like, the property, the clubhouse, the facilities, it feels big time, it feels amazing. The course itself, we hear different things about the course itself.
Well, the course itself has gone through a couple of renovations, let's put it that way. Golf course initially was brilliant, I thought.
What kind of year would that have been?
This is when I started, probably 2007, 2008, 2009. And then Ernie came in and did a lot of changes to it and made it virtually impossible.
This was silly stuff. Like, even I remember the 18th, there was no rough at all off the green, so I think Luke Donald and Westwood had a playoff at one stage or something, but the ball, if you didn't land it perfectly on that par 5,
you were in the water, or you were in the back bunker where you couldn't keep it out of the hazard,
right? So stuff like that.
Yeah, it was just too severe, and like, members couldn't play it at all.
They couldn't
play it. Like, they forget about the golf course has to be a viable thing as well.
What was the thinking then from before Ernie's renovation? Who was the driving force that we need to change this course that clearly players loved?
I think the tour kind of wanted it a little bit more difficult, you know. Like 17, 18, 19 under was winning, and they didn't want that. Now, why, I don't know. I think people come to see birdies and, you know, eagles and whatever else. They don't come to see guys hacking it around and hitting it in water and all the rest.
I never think less of a player or a course who's shot 17 under across 4 days. I think it's brilliant playing. I don't think it must have been easy.
As long as it's not driver wedge, driver wedge, driver wedge.
Sure.
We could have some very famous Chinese people walking past us right now, but we don't know.
Yeah. Great. You're getting the tourists in. That's good.
We'll get the tourists in. But after Ernie's design, they've kind of softened it, and then they said, right, we had too many players not playing because of the greens.
Right.
So let's change the greens.
What was wrong with the greens?
They were just old style, you know, poana grass grew at different times throughout the day. Greens got bobbly.
Okay.
So they've dug it all up under the committee style, which I don't think ever works, really, to be honest with you. But committee style of Ernie Els, Paul McGinley. I don't think Ernie was incorporated in this one. It was Paul McGinley, Thomas Bjorn, and European Tour design team.
So Ernie enjoyed getting that news.
Especially, I think actually,
Ernie, we love what you've done here.
Yeah. I think he sold his house though, so I think he's probably off the estate now.
By the way, the houses around that place are unbelievable.
Phenomenal.
There's one on the 17th, and there's a beautiful balcony, and I remember walking there on a Sunday following Martin Keimer one morning, and the owner of the house was sitting there reading his paper,
probably ignoring the golf that was going by.
Completely. And just gorgeous.
Guy next door to him went to prison for knocking down an old house that was there.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, if you knock down a house without getting permission.
Well, there you go.
So, what's the word on the course? We're told it's easier now. Shot or two easier.
Yeah, and the greens are far more, you know, playable. Okay. I think easier red, better putting surfaces. Mm. I'd say you'll probably see maybe 15, 16, 17 under win this week.
Okay. You mentioned you don't want to be driver wedge there. Interestingly, you were saying at Wentworth, technology is such that you don't take your driver out of the bag very often.
You don't need it, to be honest with you. You don't need it at all. Wentworth was one of the golf courses where I loved to go to because I didn't need driver. You could get 3-wood around it pretty much on most holes. You have to shape it a lot. But Wentworth is nearly, I think, run out its course. I think they'll probably take the PGA to somewhere else. I think it's too confined. There's not enough room for people. The venue really has kind of grown bigger than the actual golf course.
Yeah. Feels quite old school and charming, but maybe it doesn't quite fit for the purpose
of
what it needs to be. Last point, and let's reconvene in 4 or 5 weeks and do this again out here, but at that stage the Rolex series will be 4 or 5 weeks into its 8-week run. saw Gary Murphy writing about it this week, and he was saying he thinks it's a really good idea. They're trying. Prize money ultimately is the only way to get the big names and try and get a bit of publicity for the tour and strengthen the feel of the tour. You're less convinced of the Rolex series?
I'm less convinced because I look at the tournaments that are behind the Rolex events and the other tournaments. Like, take for example, they played a tournament in Portugal recently for 500,000. They've played another one in Sicily for €1 million. There's too big of a gap now between the Rolex series, which is $7 million, yeah, and then the smaller events. So you're either a $7 million or you're a very small event, and there's no in between. Mm. Previous to this, there was a lot of $3-4 million events. Okay, they didn't get to seven, but they were big events.
See, they clearly felt, you know, we're getting nowhere here. We're not getting the publicity or the media coverage with these 3-4 million events. Let's go big. 8, 9, 10, 12 times a year. Own the golfing landscape for those 10-12 weeks, and it's not fair on the other pros.
And all the rest can then suffer. Yeah.
I think Pelly and the boys probably said, look, that's what we got to try that strategy here. But now, right, and me, Nathan, and most golf fans think brilliant, and we're not so worried about the €500,000 tournament or those pros when the players is on. We're not even thinking about it. But it's very tough. From the player's point of view, it must be very tough.
Oh, it must be, yeah. Like, I'm looking at the schedule there, and my ideal schedule when I played was 3 weeks on, 1 week off.
Right.
And you didn't have to travel, you know, that much. Now there's a co-sanctioned event on this week in Fiji.
Yeah.
Against Wentworth. Now, so all the lads who didn't get into Wentworth, you know, did they travel all the way to Fiji to play for 1 week for €1 million? Mm. It's unfair to ask guys to do that.
Yeah.
Because the return is very, very low. You know, you can only maybe make the top 5-6 guys can make any money.
It's almost as if the regular European tour is becoming a de facto challenge tour at this stage, that you'll have the Rolex series and everything else is basically people trying to progress up the ladder, make enough money that you get into these big Rolex series events.
Yeah, it used to be a 2-tier tour, you know, and now it's gone to maybe 3, if not 4. You know, you got the Rolex, you got your normal events, you've got your smaller events, and then you've got challenge tour, you know, so it's a real stepping stone to get to this elite field. But can the elite fields, you know, survive? Mm. Like, if I'm a tournament, say for example, you know, a French Open, and I was €4 million a couple of years ago, maybe five or six years, and I don't want to get to €7 million. But really, why do I need to be 4? I can be €1 million and still get the same field.
Yeah, true. There's no incentive. Yeah.
There's no great incentive. So I'm not saying I'm against it, but I'm saying it's a very difficult balancing act, and I don't think they've got it quite right just yet.
Yeah. Listen, thanks so much for having us out again. It's a pleasure. This place is just in fabulous shape. We obviously recommend everyone to come out here and experience it for themselves. We'll talk to you again soon.
Cheers. Thanks, lads.
There we are. Excellent stuff from Peter Lawrie. Loads of stuff there. We'll go back and chat with him in the next couple of weeks, see how this Rolex thing works out. I do take his point about the second and third tier guys on tour. They're forgotten now. Keith Pelly has definitely said to them, look, guys, you're not bringing in the crowds. You're just, it's not really, it doesn't matter to me about your well-being or if you're getting 50 grand or 30 grand or 100 grand.
Well, maybe Keith Pelly is realising if we don't have a very strong top tier, there has to be some trickle down eventually. And when he gets that sorted, then he can start thinking about those a little bit below. But even, funny enough, the last time I played in Luttrell Sound was the day we played with Michael Hoy.
Oh, yeah.
And Michael Hoy did a really good last week in Italy.
Eighth.
I didn't check it out, but Peter Lawrie was suggesting maybe somewhere around 25 grand.
Yeah.
For a top 10 finish on a European Tour event.
Minus tax, minus expenses.
160 grand for first place.
Caddy, yeah. No, it's true. I accept the point. It's very difficult, but I do understand if Keith Pelly is going for a let's make the top stuff really good and hope for a trickle down effect. I get that. I think that's, they've got to try something like this. So we'll see how it all unfolds. We're pretty much done. It's now well after the time I should be going to go and do this thing tonight. So we might wrap this up.
Peter Lawrie is a man of a lot of opinions. like we could have spoken to him for another hour. Yeah. We said, Peter, how's about we leave it for now and we just come back out again.
If that's what the job entails.
The next time the weather is good and we chat again.
Playing 18.
Works for everybody.
Playing 18 is the only,
yeah.
The only rule I'm insisting on. So that's us for this week. Thanks as ever to Dubai Duty Free. The Irish Open is very much on the horizon and we will talk to you loud and clear next Thursday. Good luck. Go and tell all my exes wear Rolexes, but I reside right here in Dardanelle, all picket town. Little J.D. Starter kid right here.